Brock and Kevin. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. When trust matters, you can count on them. All Four Seasons Garages right here in Nashville. Go to fourseasonsgarages.com to find out more. They're pros for installation and repair. They're also family-owned and operated. So, again, the website is fourseasonsgarages.com. We're thrilled to have them on board with us. Alongside Mark Howard and Blaine Bishop, I'm Kevin Ingram. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin will join us. And also later in the hour, Take 3 comes your way around 8:45. Hopefully got some good stuff ready for these guys this morning. Want to join us, be part of the show, it's super easy, 615-737-1045, or reach us on Twitter at WUZ1045. If you want to be nice and depressed, you can turn over to the NHL Network, where they're showing a replay of the 2018 playoff game between the Predators and the Winnipeg Jets. I think this is game two. Nashville did not perform especially well at home in that series, and we all know how it ended up. they could win the games up in Winnipeg. They just couldn't win all the ones at home in that series. After they kind of struggled, you remember, to get past Colorado, and then Winnipeg knocked them out.
And then game seven, disaster.
Man. Yeah,
over before it even really barely started.
Yeah, that was not a fun game seven. But anyway, that's on NHL Network. I just flipped over there. I flipped over in time to see Fiala score a goal, so maybe things are looking up. For the NFL, the preseason is going to be cut in half, according to reports that got out there yesterday. They're going to play weeks 2 and 3. What games 1 and 4 will be cut off the schedule? That means a game against Washington and a game against Chicago for the Predators, or for the Titans, I should say. You had Preds on the brain at watching this game. But for the Titans, they make that change. So they'll play the Giants on the 22nd at home, and then they'll play Tampa Bay the 29th on the road. So Mark's G-Man will be here at Nissan Stadium, and then we'll get to see the Titans play Brady and company with Tampa Bay later on in August.
And we'll find out at that point how important those preseason games are. Last year we saw a lot of coaches not even play their starters, but then express regret. Matt Nagy of the Bears, one of those coaches. So it'll be interesting to see how those coaches approach those two games, but also two less preseason games. Nobody, I don't think, is really crying over that. There are reports that as they negotiate, go back and forth, the league and the NFL Players Association on protocols for the preseason. There is talk that the Players Association would prefer that there be no preseason games. The league ultimately has the final say unless they go over 4 preseason games. It'll be interesting to see how that is negotiated. If they cancel the last 2 preseason games, again, not a lot of tears shed.
Why would the players want no preseason games? Think about that now. Huh? No preseason games.
Two less chances of maybe getting the virus. I don't know.
To me, you would want some preseason games. If you haven't done anything as far as in a team setting in months.
Yeah, that makes no sense. I'm trying to figure out leverage here, and what do you – I have no idea where it's going. So that doesn't make sense to me. If you're able to play and practice, you got to be able to play in these preseason games. So maybe they're referencing that no preseason games because they don't think – they should be on the field yet in a game climate, but they have to say then you can't be starting practice either. I don't know where they're going with that one. So if there's no preseason game, then there's no practice in my mind. But if they get started, 2 preseason games is hopefully enough with no off season. Let's just say that no off season work on OTAs.
Yeah, on the field.
On the field, to me, then that leads to we need to have more preseason games. Yeah, see, I think the total opposite. If you haven't, if you've had an off season where it was normal, then okay, and narrow it down to 2 preseason games. You still need some live action game work. Get your timing down in game. You're running much faster. Timing is a little off from practice, especially offensively. So yeah, that just all of that. So, but hopefully they get started on time. But if they don't, you know, I'm just interested in why they didn't move it back to the third and fourth preseason games. I'm just kind of a no nonsense guy. That just seems logical. If you may happen to move the season back and training camp back when you get started, you got to leave that window of opportunity to be able to do that, and not a window for an opportunity for 2 weeks before the first regular season game.
That's a long time, isn't it?
I care less about that. Yeah,
yeah, it's usually like a week and a half between
when you play the last
preseason game and the first regular season game. That makes the gap even bigger. You know, you're looking at about 2.5 weeks.
Maybe they're looking at it. It's at Inge, and now I'm thinking about it. Maybe they're thinking maybe the virus picks up there after the preseason. Yeah. They retest, and that some guys may be positive, and they're trying to give more of a window for the 7 to 14 days so that they can still have, let's say, Tannehill test positive. This is just, you know, theoretically, and at the end of the preseason, then he still has a chance to still start week one. I'm trying to, because these guys are smart. Now, that's the only thing I can think of.
That would make some sense. Yeah, I mean, you know, give you a little flexibility with those players if you did have some, you know, test positive. Maybe it gives you a little extra window.
Asymptomatic, by the way.
Right.
So then I get it. And maybe that's why they went that route. I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, that probably is what it was. Yeah. So with that being said, we still get to see TB12, baby. Yeah. I still get to see him. Tannehill's going to take him a trophy, a little baby trophy.
Yeah, Seal will get to go against gets Brady and Gronk. You know, get the DBs will get some work against Antonio Brown. I mean, you get to still see that game against Tampa Bay.
They do have some receivers called, you know, Evans and Godwin. So they
I forgot about that.
So, yeah, it'll be a huge test here. And watch what happens. None of those guys actually play.
Well, there is that possibility too.
Scheduled to appear.
Maybe the right terminology. What do you think these early season games are, aside from the preseason, when they get to actually playing games? Let's say it all goes as scheduled and they start the season on time. What do you think the level of play is going to be in some of these games? Just given what's gone on in the off season and you know how things might go in camp, but just to get ready for the year.
I think a couple of things, minimal rookie impact, because I think it's going to take more time for some of these first-year guys to find their way, given the lack of time on the field in the preseason and even in camp. And second, what Blaine said during the 6 o'clock hour, I think line play is going to be ragged early on. I think that's almost unavoidable, given the lack of reps. So those are two things that I'm looking at right away.
Yeah, and a team like the Titans who run the football, well, I think it's going to be critical to get their offensive linemen, get in the trenches, get into a flow, and defensively get used to the contact and everything else. The physicality is something that you can't, you know, create on your own. So you have to get back into that mindset and pick it up, you know. So I think even before the, you know, pandemic and C-19, that was always a little bit of an issue early on in the season to get the physicality by the O-line and the D-line to make sure you get that aggressive nature and playing in the trenches, hitting every down. It's something that you can't create. So I'll be watching that for sure. And, you know, besides all the other things, timing on offense and those things, but I think you can create those a little bit with some of these guys working a lot, you know, before they even get to the facility to start practicing. So, yeah, that's going to be a tough one there.
Hey, 12 on 104.5 The Zone. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Up next, we'll visit with Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbett. And a little over a half hour from now, we will have Take 3. So stay tuned. More of the show coming up right here on 104.5 The Zone. Dun, dun, dun. Hey, 19, welcome back. 104.5 The Zone, the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. FourSeasonsGarages.com is their website. With Mark Howard and Blaine Bishop, I'm Kevin Ingram. We always enjoy our weekly chat with Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbett, and here he is. Tim, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, Kevin. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, from a timing standpoint, what's going to be the hardest part for these guys getting ready to return to playing in the majors as they get back to working out this week?
I just think getting in rhythm of the game again. I think, you know, a lot of them have been working out, but baseball is such a team sport. So I think just to get back together and be participating as a group and kind of the rhythm of turning double plays and rhythm of facing live pitching. I mean, I just think there's a lot of nuances in the game of baseball that even though you can work out and practice them, you can't really do them at the level you need to until you're with groups. And I think that's going to be the unique part. And then I do think the soft tissue injuries that will come about just from strain and doing something at a higher intensity level is going to be a thing too. So I'll be interested to see how that works out for them.
You're going to have 16 of your former players on the 60-man player rosters. You know, close to home in Atlanta, you've got Dansby Swanson, obviously, but also Kyle Wright and Philip Pfeiffer. What kind of opportunity is it for some of these younger players?
Well, I think it gives the younger players at least a light of opportunity. I think when you're that 4A player, that AAA player, or AA player for that matter, you wonder when your time has come. And I think this situation will probably prove to be positive for several of those kids. We'll give them like a guy like Phil Pfeiffer. I mean, he's been in professional baseball for a time, and I think it's going to give him a mental burst of energy where this, you know, if they didn't have this, I think it'd be questionable. He might get some spring training time, but I think he probably would be brought right back down to AAA. And now with a 60-game season, he becomes a viable option. So if he shows well and starts doing some things, then next thing you know, he's built some player self-esteem, so to speak, and some confidence. And next thing you know, he gets more opportunities and he may find himself a role. So I think it's just an opportunity for these kids that they've never had before.
Our guest is Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt head baseball coach here on the Zone.
Yeah, Coach Corb, you just talked about it, the little nuances of the game and playing on a daily basis. When you're on the 60-man roster and you never really get an opportunity to play a lot, how are those players are going to be able to, I guess, still get some experience and get some reps in besides practice to kind of stay up to speed, in playing when they do get opportunity? Let's say they don't get the opportunity to roster, but they're still not actually getting out there to play a lot of reps.
Yeah, I think I just got off the phone with former player Jason Esposito, who's working with the Cleveland Indians big league club. And he actually, I asked him that question. I asked him about the other players that might not, they're part of the 60 man, but not part of the big league roster. What will they do? And for the Indians example is they've got a Lake County affiliate that's 20 minutes away. So they're taking the rest of the group and kind of funneling them over there. And it will be kind of a training site for them where I'm sure it's a lot like spring training or actually instructional league where they get reps during the course of the morning, probably play some simulated games in the afternoon and then get funneled over to the big league team every once in a while. So that's how they're doing it. I would imagine other big league teams are doing a lot of the same. I don't know if all the big league teams, I have to think about it, but I don't know if they have other auxiliary ballparks close to the major league teams, but most of them are just going to the major league sites and working out there. So it'll be interesting how they can keep those other guys going.
Well, speaking of interesting, there's a possibility that, the high school baseball players may miss two seasons. How does that affect how you go about recruiting a player? Just imagine this now. You know, he could be a sophomore, even if he played on varsity, but you haven't seen him possibly his last 2 years of high school baseball. How is recruiting going to happen, or how are you going to go through your processes to really get, to know a player?
Well, it's a challenge. I mean, we're seeing it right now, Blaine. We're seeing schools commit kids that they haven't seen. They're watching them on video. They're watching them on social media. And we refuse to do something like that. You may feel like you're getting behind in the recruiting race, but you're not. I mean, the bottom line is it's tough for those players. That becomes a challenge. What's going to happen futuristically with these kids and how they play high school baseball, what high school football looks like? Because I think a lot of what happens with other sports is going to be determined by what they do in college football and high school football and what the schedules look like beyond then. I was talking to an in-state recruit yesterday who happens to be a football player. And we talked about that particular situation about, you know, maybe moving high school football into the spring, where he's a very interested baseball player, and the fact that he might not get that opportunity to be seen in 2 years. So I think there's still a lot of mystery out there, and there's so many questions that go unanswered. But I do think that as we go forward, once a couple questions get answered, then more and more are going to get answered too. It's just, I think the hard thing about all of this is when it started, they said that this pandemic could be basically a year, maybe a year and a half. And, you know, we only have been involved in it for about three and a half months, and it seems like a year. But at the same time, I just think it's kind of the instability of not having what you had and what it will look like in the future. And just got to hope that at some point in time, we'll start moving again, and these high school baseball players will have opportunities to play in front of these coaches. So it'll happen at some point.
I guess lastly, what you saying, all that, do you have any ideas on, let's say, baseball playing here in college, let's say in the next month, let's say if you were trying to put together a program to actually play, what would you actually put together as far as a schedule and actually, you know, having your players protected at the same time? Do you think that's a possibility that that you could actually do that and still get away with playing baseball today? If the majors are playing, can college play right now too?
I don't know. You know, here's the thing, Glenn. You're entering these kids and funneling them back into action, but the people who are working with them are older people like myself. So, you know, there's a cause and effect here that would occur by grouping people together. Do I think it's possible? Yes. But I also think that, you know, we kind of have to let time take care of a lot of these things. I think we can force a square peg in a round hole and try to accomplish what we think we're accomplishing, but yet we might be taking a step back or a step forward, two steps back. So I just think that we probably can do anything that we want to do, but at the risk of who and at the risk of what, and what are we really accomplishing? I think, you know, for us, I think the reality is, at least from a college baseball coach's standpoint, is we're not going to be faced with competition, at least in my mind, anytime soon. You know, potentially in the spring. Well, I hope so, but, you know, I don't know that. I mean, I don't even know what they're going to do with college football right now. So I think the thought of just getting our kids back in school and just trying to build them structure just in life more than anything else, because that's what they've been missing. It's one thing to be part of a college baseball program, but it's also being part of having that life where you're moving your mind and you're getting into some type of routine, because God knows none of us have had any type of routine. And especially for an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, they need routine right now.
Well said. We're on with Vanderbilt's head baseball coach, Tim Corbin.
Tim, as far as pitching is concerned, how different are you coaching your pitchers as opposed to 10 or 15 years ago? And what are you seeing at the professional level? Who's taking from where? Are the majors taking from the college game, or is it vice versa?
Well, I would say to answer your first question, a whole lot different, because, and you know, Derek Johnson was on the front end of this too, because he was into a lot of different things that now have become kind of the norm at the big league level. That's why he is doing what he's doing with the Cincinnati Reds. That's why DJ was such a commodity when he was hired from Vanderbilt. But, you know, we've only had two pitching coaches here at Vanderbilt, and that's really special, and we're very lucky. And the guy we have right now has been wanted by every big league team. So Brownie, yeah, he's on the front edge of a lot of different things. I think when we talk about high-speed video and we talk about the apparatus that he now has, so that if Mark Howard is throwing a bullpen, he can see everything that Mark Howard's doing, but most importantly, he can show him why his breaking ball isn't breaking vertically down because of where his fingers are on the baseball. And he can show him right away, where 10 years ago, there was no way he could show you that. He could guess that your break ball wasn't breaking because you were throwing it in this way. But now he's showing you, and he's showing you exactly where your fingers are. And he's also showing you that if your fingertips are placed somewhere up here on top of the ball, that you're getting maybe 40 more revolutions on the ball than you were like this. And to a kid, they're going, okay, that now I understand it. Now I know I have to get my fingers here. But I think those are the things that Brownie can show a kid right now that he couldn't show a kid 20 years ago. And we can do the same thing with hitters, too, from a virtual reality situation that we now have that we didn't even have 5 years ago. Are the pro guys taking from the college guys? Yeah, I would have to say so, because you look at a lot of the hires. The front office is not so much, because I know there was just a story that came out yesterday about Ivy League front offices. But I would say in terms of the teachers and the coaches, yes, you're seeing the infusion of college coaches and teachers moving to big league levels because they feel like they've studied more. They're in the middle of education in terms of as it pertains to baseball and understanding. I do think that certainly has been the case. But still, the professional game is a whole lot different than the college game. The college game is different because of the environments, and the environments are completely different in professional baseball as compared to college.
Did you see the ESPN fan vote for the all-time college team? J.J. Blade finished second to Joe Carter in right field, and David Price finished second to Greg Swindell. Not bad. Those two guys, were pretty good in their day.
Yeah, they were really good. I mean, you look at that college team, and holy cow, that there are a lot of good players there. I'm not saying surprising to see JJ second. It was in some ways because I wondered how many people really knew the type of year that JJ Blade had. And, much like Dansby Swanson, he had a shortened college career, so we didn't see everything that those two guys did in their time here. But certainly JJ's last year was one where it was very recognizable by a lot of people. And when you come up second to Joe Carter, Joe Carter was a fantastic player at Wichita State. And the same could be said about David Price and Swindell in his time before college baseball was really on TV. Was a tremendous college pitcher with a lot of success. So it's good to see those two guys get recognized.
With the change in the bats in college baseball, does it become a lot less urgent that your players go through the wooden bat phase of their baseball year during the summer?
I think these guys do a pretty good job of adapting and transitioning. And I will say this, Mark, we used wood bats for a long period of time. So if they use them during the course of the summer, which they do because all the summer leagues are wood bat leagues, then we come back in the fall. And I would say that we only pick up an aluminum bat going, I would say, late October. So they're using an aluminum bat for about or a wooden bat for 4 months, and they're training with it, which I think is good because obviously the weight of the bat is at the head, where aluminum bat, the weight spread out a little bit more, and you certainly have to get to the sweet spot with a wood bat. So I do think that the transition now is a little bit easier because even in the training down in the cages, a lot of these kids are using the wood bat. But I would say the only time that our kids exclusively use an aluminum bat is January. Once they get to January, then it's January, February, March, and April, and May, they're using an aluminum bat, but that's half a year. So I would say there's probably at least a 7 month time where they're using wood bats quite a bit.
Tim, real quick for me, what are the options this summer for players to get in some leagues that, that might be able to play, whether it's up north or wherever?
Yeah, we do. We got some kids right now. We've got some kids playing up in the Northwoods League, and then we got kids playing in Florida too, and we're getting to see them a little bit through social media, which I guess that's the positive end of social media, but they are getting an opportunity to play. Not all of them. Guys like Kumar and Jack Leiter are not playing. They've got throwing programs off to the side, but a lot of these kids, I just saw Enrique Bradfield, a very good player, freshman player who's coming from Florida, and watched him on social media last night get a couple of hits. So it's just good to see them playing right now because they've been itching to play, and it's just good to see them face other people right now. So, yeah, I would say out of our roster, 40-man roster, we probably have 20 guys playing, which is pretty good because those leagues shrank pretty good, and really the only playing that they can do is local right now, and with the exception of Northwoods League. And the Northwoods League went from like a 20-team league to a 10-team league really quick, so they're playing in pods. But at least it's better than nothing, so some of them are playing.
Hey, thanks a lot for the time, as always. We always enjoy our visits with you every week.
Okay, happy 4th to all three of you. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, same here. Happy 4th to you. Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin joining us here on the Wake Up Zone every week. Always great to visit with Corbs and see what's going on. And you can go so much deeper than just college ball. You talk about the pros or whatever, and good perspective on all of it.
I was going to ask him draft questions, but we ran out of time.
Right. Do you think he has his big board for, like, the NBA and NHL drafts?
Maybe.
I'm sure the NHL draft has got a board.
I wouldn't doubt Coach Corbs, man.
Go, like, 10 deep on European players. coming up a little bit, going to have a take three for you. That will be on the way not too far down the road, a little after 8:45. Blaine, you brought this to our attention, that University of Southern California is telling undergraduate students that, you know, due to what, you know, kind of the situation with the coronavirus out there and the restrictions, that they make it clear that they need to dramatically reduce their on-campus density in all indoor activities for this fall semester, you know, which means online classes and more of it. And really what that means for football out there, you know, is this a precursor that the season for USC might be in jeopardy? I mean, what does that mean?
Mm. It's hard to say, really. There are a lot of schools that were talking before that they would only play football if the students were on campus. Boy, think of the toga parties, how that's going to affect things. Hard to keep a social distance at a toga party anyway, but you won't see many of those on campus at Southern Cal this fall.
Yeah, and in reading
I guess the precursor to I think it's precursor to, I mean, if you can't have students on campus, then how can you have football players playing football and next to each other in a sport that's a contact sport? I think that's the implied message here, and that's going to be interesting. If they do play football and start practicing up, then how does that work with the student body? So now you're saying that the players are different than the actual regular students, which I think sets a bad precedent and an example for what you're trying to accomplish in college as just a human being. It's a totally different mechanism. So, you know, I don't know their situation as far as the pandemic and how bad it is there in California. I'm sure that's probably the reason why. But if the student body aren't there, then why are the athletes there? They watch this. They could play football on Skype.
Yeah, they could play Alabama on Skype on September 5th.
Yeah, they can drop the play. So I don't know, man. I'm a proponent that if the student body's out there, then why are the players there? That's going to be a hard one to sell, because even if you're not educated on all the pandemic and not knowing a lot, that one's pretty clear to see. If you're a student athlete or a parent of a student athlete, well, if the students aren't there, well, then why are the players there? Their announcement so soon, I might have waited on that one, but I guess they had to get it out because they probably had to start telling students.
Yeah, probably about 6 weeks or so out from, you know, the actual semester starting, at least, you know, the way it works a lot of places. And, you know, two of the main people said, we anticipate that 10 to 20% of our classes will be conducted in person on campus. These will be face-to-face labs, studios, performance, other courses involving hands-on work, and independent research studies that require facilities and equipment only available on campus. Even these courses, for the most part, will also be available online this semester.
Mm. So what are you thinking?
I don't think that sounds pretty good. I'm kind of with you on that. Yeah, if they don't think it's safe for normal students to be on campus, then athletes being on campus and getting ready to play a football season does seem a little iffy.
Mm-hmm. Now, to the point, though, you could say student body, stay away. We can contain in a bubble our athletes. And I mean, and that could be something that could be discussed. We keep these guys in a bubble and maintain their safety and testing them to be able to continue to play football and bring in revenue for our university. I mean, what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, they might throw that argument out, but there are going to be a lot of people who feel, you know, that there shouldn't be football if there aren't students.
Yep. Yep. There's no doubt about that.
All right, 8:40 the time. We'll come back. Take three is coming up next. Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors, resumes in just a moment on The Zone.
Got hot takes. Actually, three of them. It's Take Three on 104.5 The Zone.
8:45 the time, the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. FourSeasonsGarages.com is the website. All right, here we go with Take Three. Our esteemed panel is ready to roll, and so are the questions, so here they are. Number one, the NFL preseason was cut down to two games, or it's expected to be anyway. They play those weeks two and three of the preseason and lop off 1 and 4. How many preseason games will they actually play?
I think they'll stick at two. I think the rumors that they go to zero are just that, rumors. You know, we heard for weeks that they were going to cut it back to two, and it made a lot of sense. But going to zero, it's like Blaine said, I think it becomes counterproductive. They need some kind of preseason. I think two is absolute minimum.
Yeah, two preseason games is where you got to go. I mean, if it comes in a tough situation, if you come down to maybe having one because of the circumstance, you got to have one live game. I don't care if you're, you know, Superfly or something. I mean, you need some live experience playing this game.
Yeah.
If not, you know, you're not going to be sharp. But they may look at it as long as we get some regular season games in, if that's the situation we have to deal with the pandemic, then we'll have to go with it with no preseason games, only if it's dictated by C-19. So just trying to fit a game in here or there is mute if you don't have a season. So, yeah, I mean, whatever they think is appropriate with the standard of, you know, C-19 not being involved, you got to at least have two preseason games.
Superfly, that's from like back in the early 70s.
Yeah, Superfly.
Well, Superfly Snuka was an 80s wrestler.
Right. Superfly Snuka, man. Come
I was thinking
on,
of the movie Superfly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Superfly, the late great Superfly Snuka, man.
Question number two, Derrick Henry, he was fly. He went for 1,540 yards last year. Let's say within 100 yards or so. How many do you have him rushing for in 2020, assuming they play a 16-game season?
I'm going to say 1,200. Mm. I'm going to say the king gets nicked up for a few games. He ends up with 1,200.
Mm. How many yards does the king have? He finished with how many last year?
1,540.
Ooh. I'm going to say this. I'm going out on a limb. He ain't getting that.
No, I don't think he's getting that either. And that may be a good thing.
I'm going out on a limb on that one. I don't think anybody said that. man, I want to be around 1,200.
Yeah, at 1,200 sounds like a nice number, doesn't it? I was kind of thinking, but you know, somewhere in the 1,200 to 1,300 range. And that's not saying he's going to have a bad season, but you got to think, right. You know, a full season of Tannehill helps. And I don't know that, like you say, I don't know that you want him rushing for that many yards this season. So, we were talking about, you know, team stacking the box against him, so that led into that question. Question number three:
stacking the box, by the way, sounds like a great title for a podcast.
Yes, Stack in the
Box. Stack in the Box with Kevin Ingram.
This is the Stack in the Box podcast. During some of my
with
downtime.
Will Bowling and right. Kevin Ingram.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we get Will right on that one. That could be just about anything. You know, some of my, you know, been a little down, you know, reading all this stuff about the coronavirus lately. I was thinking about, you know, a podcast called Everything is Canceled.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Everything is Canceled podcast. We talk about everything is going to be, you know, pushed back to next year or not happening, or just talk about schedules the whole time. That'd be well received. Anyway, question number three. Will winning a title in Major League Baseball, the NBA, or NHL, or MLS, will it be cheapened by the compromised season, or in some ways is it actually more admirable that you're able to kind of go through all this and win a championship this year? It'll be different, but is, you know, how do you view it as far as, you know, being admirable or cheapened by the way the season has gone and the year has gone?
Well, answer this question. Nobody has said anything about the Dodgers 1981 World Series title. Nobody said anything about the Redskins winning the Super Bowl in 1987, you know, when replacement players were used. So I don't think that's going to happen this year. It'll be different, but it'll still count.
I think with the pandemic, I think a lot of people will never forget it because of the history there is going to be set. So I think it's going to be admirable and memorable. Actually,
I think, and you hope they finish. I think it's admirable, but it'll just be so different because, you know, if there aren't like the usual amount of fans and, you know, in that atmosphere, it's just going to look really weird.
Well, you didn't ask us how it's going to look,
but I'm saying though, I mean, does it won't feel the same. Yeah, you give them credit, and down the road, people will say, well, they were the champions that year. But if you're around during this time, you'll just know that it's different. You know, as far as, like, the 81 Dodgers, that whole thing stunk if you were for the team. Yeah, the Reds totally got screwed because they had the best overall record but didn't make the postseason. But in the end, you know, the Dodgers-Yankees World Series, it looked like any other World Series. I mean, there's a giant gap in the season, and we all know that, but, you know,
It's brutal managing by Bob Lemon.
Right. Wait, my bad. What happened in 81? Because I was only one. So what happened?
Right. Well, for Blaine, you know, Blaine was a baby back then. Yeah, they had a strike in the middle of the season, and it wiped out a big chunk of the year. And so what they did was they did a split season, your record before and your record after the strike. And so that's how they determined the teams for the playoffs. Well, the Reds didn't have the best record in either half, but they were the best overall, but they were left out. So, but in the end, you know, they played the playoffs at World Series, and, you know, the Dodgers ended up winning it all against the Yankees. All right, bonus question time. Yesterday was Bobby Bonilla Day. We talked about it yesterday. He gets $1 million, you know, $1.2 million on July 1st of every year.
Plus what he gets from the Orioles.
Yeah. But here is my thinking, though. Wouldn't you rather just have the money up front? I would. You know, it sounds fun to get that $1 million bonus, yeah, every year on July 1st, but I think if it was me, I'd rather have all the money, as much money as I could get up front. Oh, and not have to be waiting for it every year.
Yeah, because you then can gain the interest on it and everything else, and the cost of living keeps continually go up. So, yeah, no doubt. That's a no-brainer.
No, not to me. Bobby Bonilla
because Mark would spend it all.
Yeah, Bobby Bonilla got the offer of a lifetime. The Mets were getting out of what, like a $3 to $5 million payment, and offered to pay him.
Mark, we weren't talking about the circumstance. We just saying in general, if you won the lottery, let's change the question. If you won the lottery, would you want all your money up front that you would get periodically you over the time?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I would take all my money up front. The deal with Bobby Bonilla is a lot different.
Right.
Bobby Bonilla would have been a moron to turn that down.
Right. Of course. So I think that's what Inge was really trying to say.
I always want as much money up front as possible. I mean, there's a reason, you know, NFL people like to, you know, defer money and that sort of stuff. But to me, you always want as much up front as you could possibly get. Like, you know, in the case of a lottery or something like that, I'm not always that confident that the funding is going to be there to pay me down the road. So if I could go ahead and get it now, that'd be fine with me.
So is your zone contract front loaded or back loaded?
It's got a huge sided bonus.
I don't know that it's loaded. Mark. I don't know if it's loaded anywhere. I'll have to go. I'll go check during the break and see what I can come up with and get back to you. It's not. I can tell you one thing. It does not have 25 years worth of a $1 million payout on July 1st.
Regretfully, mine either.
Yeah, we are well taken care of, though.
Baba Bonilla Day was yesterday. Mm-hmm. Today should be Happy Canada Day, since they're both, NHL, West and East, going to be in Canada.
Yeah, they're celebrating Canada's, becoming Canada a country by giving them both cities.
Canada Day today over here. We should be celebrating.
Yeah, the home and native land of hockey will have both the hub cities. All right, 8:55. Let's take three for this Thursday morning. When we come back, as we talked about the NHL preseason cut in half, and also favorite announcing combinations. This from an NFL.com column. We'll get into those two during the 9 o'clock hour. Coming up shortly on 104.5 The Zone.